so glad to be here. I'm in Spirit Rock. That's why I live in this weird place in their little cottages or little houses they have for teachers. So I've learned a couple of things. I was telling Sunday morning, the sit on Sunday mornings, that I've learned a couple of things. Setting out to, when we set out to take on these ox herding tales. And it seemed like just from listening to people and different practitioners that there was this ever-growing sense of this is going to be complicated and difficult. It's not going to be good like it usually is. You know, it's usually good. And now we've taken on something. It's just not going to work. And I was trying to figure out how do I articulate this? I think the tales themselves are so exciting and so engaging, but it just didn't seem like it was coming across like that to people. It seemed to be falling a little flat. And so I got on, I was preparing for Sunday and I found this video of, a Zen group sharing what the point is of the ox herding story. So, and it made sense as soon as I heard it. It's about 6 minutes long, a little more, not quite 6 minutes. I played it for Sunday. I'm gonna play it for us, and then I'm gonna talk a little bit about the framing of what I think. As Theravadan practitioners, we're not Zen practitioners, so we can't really practice the tales or the pictures within the framing that Zen practitioners would necessarily practice with. But there is a framing that we can create that within our own Theravadan practice, I think these tales can really, really support us. So I'm going to play this video and then I'm going to talk a little bit about it and then see, just check in with you and see how you are with it. Okay. I'll do it my today. I think we're going to talk about how I hold all this. And this is more of a summary of the whole trajectory of the tales. And then Tim is coming next week and I think he can do the same thing. Give you a trajectory of how he holds it, and between the two of us, we'll get a sense of how we're going to move through the year. So I'm not sure how you took that. We'll have to talk about that in and of itself. But the reason why that I looked at a lot of little videos and tried to find a short one. And the reason why I like this is because it was the first time that I saw a video that took some of the complication of these tales and narrowed it down a little bit so that it's doable. It's manageable. It's something we can practice with. You know, I've been talking for 2 weeks about how to frame the practice, because to me, the framing of how you practice with it makes all the difference in the world. I just want to point out three things I think that really stick out, really what I hope will simplify what it is that we're taking on. The first thing is, by referencing the ox as finding our true self, like this inner self, this the source of our capacity is not outside of us. The source of our capacity is inside. And the struggle we're having in life is an internal struggle, but we don't see it like that. we see the struggle with life as some kind of an external thing. And if I fix the external conditions, I won't have this struggle anymore. And to some extent, the reason why we believe that is because it's true. To some extent, you know, if you secure your housing and you finally get a stable housing situation, you're going to have less struggle when it comes to security on whether I have a place to stay. That's true. But we then think that that stability will be there all the time. And we miss that that housing situation will only be stable for a duration of time. We just don't know how long that duration is. So some of you buy your house when you're younger, you bought some house and, you know, you paid the house off. So now it's like, hey, I'm stable, right? Everything is fine. I got my house. I paid it off. Nothing's going to happen. It's stable. And then all of a sudden, you can't go up and downstairs anymore. And you have to leave that house, not because you didn't pay it off, but because you just can't physically maneuver through that house anymore. And there are all kinds of conditionality that show up that affect what we consider to be stable. And what the ox herding tales to me point to is beginning to find that stabilized understanding from within, beginning to see our struggle as an inward struggle. And that in order for us to sort of move out of the conflict, we have to first get in touch with ourselves. We first have to see that conflict within ourselves. And I think the process that the ox herding tales go through is a tale about how we are struggling. Okay, so I gotta say something here because I've looked at this video about 5 times. So I would have thought I would have caught this, but I didn't. So you may have caught it straight away, but I missed it all 5 times, 4 of the times. And then today, when I'm looking at it, I was mortified. So in the picture where the ox herder is taming this ox, I noticed it's like wiping it white. And then when it gets riding home, it's riding home on a white ox. I gotta believe that we're not talking about wiping off the color, wiping off our sense of our culture. But there is a way that we are trying to be translucent, that we're trying to actually, I will always be a Black woman in this life until I die. But I do not always have to frame everything about my life from the perspective of a Black woman. I mean, I'm a Black and I'm always going to be that way and it's always going to be there. But my framing sometimes may not even sound like Black culture. My framing can be very vast and very open. And to me, that makes more translucent and less rigid in my identity. But just in case, when I saw it, I thought, should I mention that? Did anybody else see it? I better totally miss that on Sunday, but it didn't go past me today. So anyway, this trying to find your inner self doesn't mean I am not all of the cultural structures of who I am goes away. Because at the very end, what I thought was so telling was this taking an ordinary cell, our ordinary cell, going about doing ordinary things in an extraordinary way. That to me is what it is that the tails are pointing towards. So you're not somehow trying to clean up your mess so you're a better person. I'm all clean and white and everything's great now. No, we're not pointing to that. What we're pointing to is that I am, I guess you could say, I'm one with who I am. So everything within me is both, I both trust it, I'm connected to it, and I'm not trying to fix myself. It's translucent in that way. So that's what I got the sense, that we are actually dissolving the distinction between an ordinary self and an enlightened self. And your ordinary self is the enlightened being when the two of them are blended together as one. For me, the way that we do this, let me back up a little bit. From my understanding of the Zen practitioners I know, and I, you know, like Brian Lesage, he is a teacher, used to be a Zen monk, and I love listening to his teaching because he seems to not overstate the point that he's making. And sometimes when he gives a Dhamma talk, I'm just following along with him and I'll completely miss some major point until 20 minutes later, it will hit me what he was saying. He ties it together just so beautifully. In a way, it's because what I think begins to happen to me is I begin to feel what he's saying, that I'm listening and feeling and my understanding is not coming from up here. It's coming from in the body, and I feel my way through. So how is it that we could begin to feel our way through practice in order for us to actually begin to see ourselves as, you know, the truth of my wisdom is going to come from within me? In order for us to see that, you can probably guess you can't hate yourself, right? You can't have this sense that the person I'm trying to get wisdom from is a failure, messes up all the time, never really gets it right. It's always, you know, messing things up. You're not going to get any wisdom from inside there, no matter what anyone says. So there's a way in which we have to soften into the truth of who we are as beings. And so I want to use Thanissar Bhikkhu wrote a article about what were the necessary like container structure that was needed in order for someone to enter what's called stream entry level of wisdom. So you access what I think this is pointing to. It's pointing to how do you get connected to the stream of Dhamma, the stream of Dhamma, and you're not some kind of separate self. So it's not you looking for the ox, but you and the ox are one, and you have an understanding of the true nature of who you are. To me, that's where we go when we get to this point of stream entry. We have a true sense of who we are. And he wrote this thing about how to, you know, what kind of like, what's the first stages of that? How do you create that kind of a container? I think the container we create is the container that we're going to practice with in a, over the year. And over the course of the year, my hope is that you have less and less and less self-hatred, less and less and less self-judgment, less and less and less self kind of ruminating over who you think you are, because gradually you begin to create this translucent kind of connection with your inner self. So these are the four things he said you needed. You need to associate with people of integrity. I'm going to explain these in just a second. You need to listen to the true Dhamma, have appropriate attention, and practice in accordance with the Dhamma. So let's just take, Ron, I have the link. I will put it up here in just a second. Let's just take the associating with people of integrity. So, you know, the Buddha said that the Sangha was the most important. It was the whole of the practice. And he called the Sangha members Kalyanamitas. And what he said a Kalyanamita was isn't necessarily what you think of when you think of the people you like. So I hear from people all the time. They're like, yeah, I can't go to those Sanghas because I can't. They just rub up against me the wrong way, right? But a Kalyanamita is someone who basically will tell you the truth about yourself, will rub up against you and kind of like say the things that are hard to say to each other. They are the ones that will listen and be with you and not judge you when you do some harm or hurt that you have to later try to backpedal. The Kalyanamitas are not social friends. Kalyanamitas are practitioners who practice alongside with you. So when I think here, when Thanissar Bhikkhu is pointing to associating with people of integrity, to me that means not that we're associating with people who are good or bad. They got the right political views. They come from money, or they live in certain parts of the city and they don't live in other parts of the city. It's none of that. What associating with people with integrity to me means is that you come to a Sangha and the Sangha is willing to tell the truth about where they are in their practice. They're willing to share with you the difficulties they're having, and you create space for you to share the difficulties that you're having, for them to actually have integrity about their level of practice. So if they just kind of blew off the whole month, then they have the integrity to say, yeah, I blew off the whole month. And that gives you permission to say, me too. You know, that kind of capacity to speak the truth about our practice. When you go on a retreat and you go in to talk to your teacher, you got to have the integrity to tell the teacher exactly how you're practicing. But oftentimes people will go in and they will try to create this grandiose view of how their practice is going. Oh, we're going good. It's going really good. Everything is so peaceful. Peaceful. I know that in a little bit, it's not going to be peaceful. And you're going to be so shocked by all the stuff that comes up, because the more peaceful you get, the more difficulties you see. Because that peacefulness is actually helping you see the truth of where you're holding this clinging and where you're causing yourself conflict and harm. But you got to be peaceful to see that. After a bit, it's like people begin to see the difficulty and then they think, I've somehow lost my peacefulness. I wasn't really peaceful. It's just all of this conflict that begins to happen. And so instead, they will come into their interviews and say, oh, it's going good. I'm like, it's going good. Okay, so tell me what's going good. Well, you know, I'm just having peaceful sits. Well, okay, tell me about the sits. How the sits going? You know, what makes them peaceful? Well, you know, I'm following the breath. Everything is good. I'm like, you have any thoughts stored up? Things getting difficult? No, it's good. We're going good. Everything's going good. It's just steady and smooth. It takes a lot to get people to say, it's not going good. Something's not working right. I can't seem to get it. It takes a lot. And associating with people with integrity is pointing to this capacity for all of us to be truthful about where our practice is, so that we can begin to see where the commonality of this practice, it's difficult for everybody. It's not just difficult for you. It's confusing to everybody. And so we begin to open to the truth of that. This listening to the true Dhamma is that there's a way that it's not, oh, is it Zen? Is it Theravadan? Or is it Tibetan? Or is this the right Dhamma or the wrong Dhamma? It's not really like that. But we do have the true Dhamma is what happens to you, right? So when you listen to Dhamma, the idea is you practice for yourself. I mean, this was never something where the Buddha was like, I'm going to give you the instructions for enlightenment and you will be enlightened. He could do that to people. I mean, there are suttas where he could see that you were struggling just a little bit and he would just, you know, do the zap thing and he could help you right along. I've never seen a sutta where the Buddha ever like made someone enlightened. It's not like that. What he would do is tell you just the thing that you need to hear in order for you to turn and move towards enlightenment. So the true Dhamma is that Dhamma that moves you enough to want to look into it and see into it and practice with it and come to your own understanding. It's the wisdom that arises from your wanting to practice with this. I don't know if we practice with this so much, but the Tibetans have a practice called precious human birth. It's like this idea that you recognize that if you are born in a human body, the chances of you actually being born human, as opposed to the billions of animals that are on this planet, the insects, the birds, all of it, worms, you name it. In comparison to the amount of beings other than human beings, and there are a lot of human beings, but there are way more other human beings than there are human beings. So the chances of having a human birth is, it comes from the Buddha saying that it's like a one-eyed turtle who lives at the bottom of the sea, the ocean. You know, just get that vision of the Atlantic Ocean, or the Pacific Ocean. Once you get in there in the middle, you're going to be in water for days and days and days and days before you come up on some land. So a one-eyed turtle who lives at the bottom of the sea comes up once every 500 years, just pops his head up one time and then goes back down. That turtle, the chance that turtle could pop its head up on a buoy, a circular little buoy that happens to be floating on the ocean. And the chance that this one-eyed turtle would pop its head through that buoy, through the hole. That is the idea of how precious being born human actually is. And the reason why that's important is because there's one other level of preciousness. Many people are born in lives that are so good to them. They got money, they got privilege, they got stuff, they got. They don't really want to rock the boat, so they're not going to be looking at no suffering. They're pretty much set, and they're good, and they're just going to ride that goodness right on out. Don't really want to get anything don't stir it up too much. And then there are people who are born as humans in existences that their entire existence is a struggle every day just to stay alive. It's just this constant struggle. The idea that these two groups could sit and contemplate the Dhamma is pretty shallow. It's pretty hard. They can't. One's trying to get stable and the other one doesn't want to think about suffering because there's too much good going on. So that leaves a window of people who have just enough drama, suffering, and pain in their lives to inspire them to want to alleviate it, and just enough good, positive, kind of supportive things in their lives to keep them willing to stay in the game, keep them willing to be a part of it. We are the ones that listen to the Dhamma. So the chances that we're born human and that we live in a time that we could actually hear the Dhamma, this is what the gift is, the framing that you got to kind of put your practice in, so that whatever shows up, you're not walking around judging what happens to be coming your way as I shouldn't have this or I should have a better place to practice. But instead, you are just enjoying the adventure of practicing. So this kind of listening to the true Dhamma, beginning to have a sense of, oh, what an opportunity to be able to listen to the Dhamma here and to be able to practice and to be able to experience this for myself. And gradually, you begin to chip away at this you chip away at the self-hatred. Because self-hatred does not align with the Dhamma. If the Dhamma is saying the wisdom comes from within, you can't hate nothing about the end you're going into. You got to love the self and understand there's something of a gift that my life has brought me. I went through a lot of trauma when I was a child. And I went through crazy living and you know, my parents were crazy, hot mess, trying to figure it out. They just, you know, they had a lot of work to do from their own lives that were messes. And I remember one day getting the sense that, oh, that trauma is not my curse. It was actually the gift that if I practiced with it, I could share that understanding with another who's also going through trauma. And all of a sudden, the trauma that I went through was my gift to be able to share the Dhamma. And even now, when I share some of the, just my understanding, how I framed the Dhamma, people will often say, oh my God, Tori, that was so right on. I need to hear somebody explain the Dhamma like that. not because I have more Dhamma than anyone else, but because if you came from trauma and I start talking about the Dhamma, you're going to have some understanding because I talk about it from that framing. That this kind of realization that the circumstances of your life are the gifts that allow you to practice. They are the gifts that allow you to see beyond your limited kind of view. But to do that, we got to have this appropriate attention. We're giving attention to things like the three characteristics. We're noticing impermanence and the changing nature of experience and phenomena. We're noticing dukkha is a natural, inevitable part of life. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's inevitable in life. And we're noticing how much extra dukkha we put on top of that by our attitudes and our complaining and our challenges. And then it's about this coming to understand our true self. And on Sunday, someone said that the true self is like aligning with non-self, the nata. And that's what I think it is. I think this beginning to understand that anatta it's empty. It's not non-existent. It's just empty. And we begin to access a capacity to recognize it's not personal. I'm not a bad person. I am this way. And sometimes that way is going to cause harm, and I need to work on the harm part, and sometimes it's not going to cause harm. But either way, it's not I'm a bad person and something's wrong with me. Learning to see that is difficult. That's the struggle the tails are pointing to. And then lastly, you're practicing in accordance with the Dhamma, which is this kind of like the idea of the dependent origination that we practiced with before, the Four Noble Truths that we practiced with before. It's really learning to judge your wisdom based on your direct experience and not the intellect that we kind of look at life through. Okay, so I said a lot. And the thing that I want to point to that I think is different about this year coming up, we'll see what Tim says, but this is what I think the difference is. Usually, every year, we pick a Dhamma topic, and then we practice talking about that topic, giving practice suggestions, looking at how that topic is in relation to something else, and we give these long Dhamma talks about the topic. This is going to be a little different year. It's going to be a little strange. I got to admit, Monday night, we are used to having a Dhamma talk, and I keep thinking to myself, this is going to be difficult trying to give a Dhamma talk on some of these stories. But what the month is really about is you hearing the story, hearing the looking at the picture, and then practicing with it, and then sharing what you uncover. It's not me telling you what searching for the ox is. It's you beginning to feel into what does it feel like when I am searching for something that I don't even know what I'm searching for, but I know that there's a better way than what is currently happening. I'm just not quite sure how to access it or what it is or how to find it. So there's 71 people on this call. If all 71 of us begin to talk to each other about what it's like to search, we take some of the little notes out of the picture, but we talk about each one of us searching. We can begin to learn that searching is an ordinary process in coming into alignment with non-self, anatta, the sense of awakened, extraordinary being. It helps us shave away some of that judgment we have about ourselves because we share with 71 people realizing, Oh man, this is, yeah, this is, I'm doing okay. The searching's okay. I got it. Maybe I see the little tracks. And then we start getting more and more excited about what we see because we're sharing our own experience and listening to the experiences of others. So the reason why I think this month is going to be a little different is because we have to depend on each of us sharing our experience. So I think the talks will be shorter, and I think there'll be more time for people to open up and share. Yeah. So to that end, I want to stop here and give people an opportunity to just share what they thought about the video, what they're thinking about the comments here. If you could just go down to the reaction button and raise your hand whenever, if you're ready or you want to share something, and this, let's just share with each other and get a sense of what people are thinking. You know, we all are looking at each other and yet we don't have any idea what anybody's thinking. You just have an idea of what I'm thinking. And so this is an opportunity to just kind of share your thoughts. If you're not up for sharing it out loud, because, you know, it can be a little intimidating, then just put something in the comment, what you think about what we looked at, what you're hearing. And I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this link here so you have the link. Yeah, Marquise, thank you so much for starting this off. Can you, who's doing the tech?
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can now.
There we go.
Hey, family.
to worry, bro, like, this is one of my, oh my God, I just get so excited because, like, what you are encouraging people to do is to really, like, take ownership of their own experience.
Yes, that's what I'm encouraging.
Yes, and I can search far and wide. I can listen to talks everywhere. I can listen to a whole bunch of people. But I just feel the authenticity in this type of practice because just like you were saying, we're all searching. And to me, it gives me an innate sense of like curiosity. Yes. Because you inquire for somebody to look through their own lens. I think it motivates me to practice a little harder versus like looking at some concept or looking at something that I thought should be a certain way. So I know over like the last year and a half that I've been practicing, what I thought perfect was is not it at all. And so you start to really love like being imperfect. So like, I didn't know how, like the more and more I realized like I was like more of a mess, like the more and more I'm starting to fall in love with it because it's like, it's my experience. And I can work with what I got. So I just think that, to me, this is so the right way to do this. And I just think it saves people so much time. So that's yeah. All I wanted to say. That's my thoughts. Yeah.
That's beautiful. But you see how encouraged, I feel encouraged just listening to you talk about it. So it's like very much encouraging. This is the point I'm trying to make. And as we go through the month, we're going to see this more and more and more because we're sharing what it's actually, what the felt sense of going through these pictures actually are. Yeah, Carlito, I got to fix this link also. So go ahead, Carlito.
Yeah. when I watched the video yesterday, I got pretty emotional and it wasn't really clear. And then I was watching the video again today and I could still feel that emotional ness. And I was just thinking, why is that? And I think for me, there's something about the images and the journey that there's a lot of implicit self-love and self-compassion and kind of, a, you know, you mentioned self-hatred, a peeling away of self-hatred. And there's something very, very touching healing about that. And yeah. I think that's maybe why I got kind of a little emotional watching the journey through the images. And just wanted to share that my experience for me.
Yeah. And there's a you can see associating with people with integrity, you can see that if we're all kind of sharing this kind of vulnerability, that it adds to the whole process of being able to be with our vulnerabilities. Because we're all scared to be vulnerable. I got a lot of courage, but as soon as I feel vulnerability, all that courage goes out the window. But if I am vulnerable with my good friend Dara Williams, when we are in the same boat together, I always feel like, oh, well, you know, girlfriend, when we're together, we can do it. We can do whatever. I don't care. We can do it. And so that sense of vulnerability gets lessened, not because I don't feel vulnerable anymore, but because my sense of courage gets stronger because of my being able to do it with Dara. So that this vulnerability, if you're by yourself, we all know it. When we try to sit by ourselves, we can barely stay there. We sit with the Sangha, then we can begin to stay and practice longer. And so we're here to help support that, Carlito. That's the whole point of Sangha, so that you don't feel like you're trying to do it on your own.
Yeah, and being vulnerable repetitively, or, you know, seems like it somehow builds the courage as well. You know, that process somehow builds courage too, maybe.
Resilience. It does. It builds resilience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Beth?
Hey, well, a couple of things. I was, I loved the video. I appreciated it so much because when I heard y'all talk about that we're going to do the ox herding pictures, I had a flashback of being in St. Mark's and hearing Rodney talk about it.
I know.
Back in the day. And I remember looking around thinking, I am not smart enough to be with these people. This is not going to work out very well. I knew that he was saying some really smart things, but I would walk out of there thinking, I'm not sure exactly what he said. And I'm just really surprised that this many years later, I'm not surprised by anything anymore, but I'm surprised that the corners of self-doubt that keep popping up after all of this, that storyline of self-doubt. And I am so... I'm bolstered every time I get on or every time I'm able to go to the hall and see other people speaking truth, like as you were saying. And there's something about, like just now when I was listening to Carlito talk, it was like, I mean, I see Carlito, I know he's a person, but what he was saying was Dhamma. And yes. So what I'm engaging with is the Dhamma in Carlito. The Dhamma that's coming out of Carlito, which speaks to what you say, that like our relationships with each other is not social in the usual way, that there's an overarching piece to our engagement that is beyond our personalities, that's beyond our intellect. And that helps me sort of sidetrack my intellect. And I think that's why the pictures today were like, oh, I understand that. I understand this. This makes sense. Why didn't I see this 10 years ago?
I think it's because it was long Dhamma talks. This is what I'm trying to point to. She said, I think Carlito's capacity to speak up comes from Marquis saying something. It's like a dominoes that begin to fall because we get our strength from each other. This is why I think the Buddha was pointing to that Sangha is not half the holy life. It is the whole of the holy life because we don't. Sorry, Morgan. I'm trying to get some dominoes. That was great. It's not half the holy life. It's the whole of the holy life because our capacity for awakening, we have to do it alone, individually. But we have to have the courage and the strength. The resources comes from all of us together. It's what gives us the capacity to stay with some difficulty. And we're basically, we're basically seeing ourselves through the eyes of other beings and not through our limited judging.
Yes.
Judging kind of you're not good enough energy. We're seeing ourselves through other people's eyes. And it's perfect. I was going to note, did you want to say something else, Beth?
Saying okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I was going to note what Sally said here, that no idea what you're getting into, but really excited about being a part. That's it. This is, the difference is, it's our practice that is going to help us begin to understand what's happening. And when it comes to coming into our true self, the direct experience of any moment, we can't get it from anywhere else. We have to get it from how I'm practicing with it. So I have a little suggestion I'm going to give to Tim. I hope he'll go along with me, but I don't know. I think at the end of the month, one of the yogis on Thursday night said, we should have everybody bring a picture or a poem or anything that represents what their practice was like that month. You know, it could be anything. It could be you saw something in nature and it's all gnarly and tightened up together and you bring it in, it's toned it up, you know, we get into breakout groups and share how the practice was represented. And it may be a song. It may be a poem. It could be anything. Could be your own writing, you know, journaled something, and this is what this month, this is what searching means to me. And as we begin to share that, I think our understanding, the collective wisdom of the group is going to help us begin to let go of some of this limiting views about ourselves. I see your hand, Kathy.
Yeah, thanks, Tuari. This is so radical for me. So radical to not be thinking negative thoughts about myself all the time, whether I'm doing this or doing that. Mm-hmm. And but the last month, I keep seeing it in these notes I take. You can't do this and hate yourself. Blah, blah, blah. On and on, over and over. And it's starting to be a slow drip. Like, oh, yeah, just let myself. Is it okay for me just to let my mind go and watch, you know, rather than be down, you know, down. So I'm very excited about this. I think.
Yes, it's gonna very good.
Be different for me. So
great. Thank you, Kathy. Randy, thank you for joining us. New and everything. That's way to step up.
This is so on me. This should be 4 weeks from now or 4 months from now. But as I was watching the ox, when I saw that black ox, I knew who he was in me. And curiously enough, as he became whiter, I thought, oh, that was me today. I was the white ox today. I live alone, and I have had a tough couple of years, and I've blamed it for those 2 years up until just recently. Something went off. It was all my fault. I wasn't good enough to be liked. I made mistakes in my life, and I was just going to sit here and rot away all by myself. And I'd sent messages to a few people, and I had a whole bunch of jobs pull out on me because of the COVID. I had 5 jobs in 5 days this week. Every one of them canceled. And so I got all this time by myself, and I was checking out, you know, okay, well, I'll see if I can get a phone conversation or something with my friends. And every one of those friends ignored me. And I stood at this crossroads today, and I said, okay, well, you're going to hate yourself again and pick yourself up off the floor crying again about your worthlessness, or not, and trust and trust and trust. And oh yeah, and I'm going to go to that community and see if I can just see. I don't know. I wasn't looking for anything specific. I just wanted to see exactly what I've gotten. And I'm so excited. And
that's great.
And I'm sorry that I've become a little white today.
No, yeah. You have to be sorry. That's the becoming white as it is. It's not white as it is. We're translucent. We're not as hardened separate self. We are one, are both our true nature, which is the part of you that shines kindness and beauty, and the conditioned self that came from whatever conditions rise within your life. Those two beings are not two separate beings. It's not like I'm the conditioned self trying to become the empty self. We are the same.
This is true confessions. I felt like I needed to apologize for my whiteness because of your blackness.
Oh my God. That's why I'm trying to point to you. That's no, this don't go down there. I don't even know if I had the understanding, if I had seen the black ox turning into a white ox. When I first looked at the video, I more than likely would have never showed it for that very reason. No, we are not turning into white
people. I don't feel bad about that.
Yes.
I don't. We are not, I did have some reservations around your strength. And
I got you.
Yeah.
Let me turn this off.
Thank you.
I didn't want anyone to spin into that understanding.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to get confused because of that. I didn't want to offend the people of color in the room because they may have seen it straight away. And I didn't want to just reinforce this notion of white supremacy. So this is not about color at all. It really is about translucent. That's what I saw in the beginning. That's what I think it's about.
And I can't help but carry my baggage around with
me. I know. So and I
about I, how can I be a right white guy to this world?
I think I've come to understand it like this. I don't know how to explain it any better than the best way to be the best white guy in the world is to be around people that include non-white people. And there's just no better way of doing it.
All right.
Because I am going to talk different. I'm going to act different. There's a difference you're going to see. And as you hear the Dhamma, regardless of what this black woman says, you hear the same Dhamma you would hear from a white man or a white woman or anyone else or Asian, you hear the same dhamma from regardless of gender, regardless of race, regardless of, you know, someone's economic status. When you begin to see that, then you are going to be fine in the world. And oftentimes we can't see that if we live in worlds where everything looks and acts the same. Then we begin to think that the sameness is what makes it right. Because if it weren't right, we wouldn't be all doing it this way. So as soon as someone comes in and does it a little differently, we think they're wrong. Clearly, they're wrong because we're right. This is the way you do it. And so the more you're with groups that have different views and different thinking, which is why I think this whole opening up the practice so that everybody shares how they're kind of feeling and how they're not, you don't have to, but people share what they're feeling, what they're going through as we go along over the year. That's how we're going to begin to see there is no right or wrong. It also, I think, is going to help each one of you stop judging how you're doing it. Because if you hear this teacher say, do it like this, do it like this, do it like this, do it like this, you think, oh, I got to do it like this. So I keep trying to do it like that and I can't seem to get it. But if you hear all these different people talking about how they do it, gradually you are going to let go of your judgment and you will do it however you are. And the reason why I know this works is because nine bodies, this is the way Philip insisted that we teach nine bodies. He does not let us teach nine bodies from some framing that says this is the way you should experience each one of the nine bodies of consciousness. Instead, he comes from this framing that says, this is all the possibilities, and you may not even be experiencing that. Just pay attention to what you're experiencing and share that. Tell us that. And so all the practitioners that practice nine bodies, there's this automatic understanding or this conditioned understanding that says, my direct experience is what I'm going to rely on. Whatever's directly happening to me, I'm going to share that as a part of the wisdom. And that's what happens. The wisdom grows from that. So that's all we're pointing to is each of, we're going to just learn how to practice sharing from that shared wisdom that we all have. And it'll sound a little different depending on where you come from. But it doesn't matter. We'll all understand what we're talking about. All right. Yes, Cheryl.
I was just sitting here remembering watching the video, and it's the second time I've seen it. And this time when I was watching it, I was just thinking about this. I just wanted to share it. I was developing a relationship with the character, with the little man. And just as he was going through each one of the steps, there was just this sense of really, I don't know. I just felt a relationship with him. And so, you know, I guess that's.
Because the character is going through what we go through.
Right.
And from my perspective, we could look at it from the overall process of coming into total, you know, like a stream entry, like the awakening self. Right. And we could also look at it as, I think it's sort of what Randy was pointing to, some moment in time.
Yeah.
Coming into my true self in a moment in time. Mm-hmm. And we've all kind of gone through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So let me share some of these comments here and there. Let's see. Yeah, so Michelle was saying, so often feel confused and lost. This sense that I have no idea what I'm doing. And this talk reminded me that being lost and lacking confidence doesn't really have to be a problem. It doesn't. And when you hear more and more and more people saying, I didn't understand. When Rodney gave that talk, you know, it's like a lot of people didn't understand what he was pointing to at times. But yet you were so interested. So you'd show up next week. Just like, there's something I'm supposed to learn here. But it was hard to understand. And hopefully this year it will not, we will approach it in a way that helps people really step into it. Yeah, and Deb said about the specialness about being born. Yes. I think that humans have made such a harsh hash of this world, destroying the climate, unending wars, cruelty, and poverty all over the place. Better to be my house cat. I don't know. I don't know if your house cat can awaken. So it's sort of like the gift of this, the gift of this being human. I don't know if you guys look at these videos, but I look for videos of humans helping animals. And some of these animals get stuck in nets and they're so scared of the human. And yet that human has to have this degree of patience to help them get out of the net. And you can see, I've seen videos where animals will take off running and then they'll stop and turn around almost to say thank you and then take off running. You know, it's like birds, animals, fish, all these beings out there. For whatever negativity humans do to the world, we equally do a level of care that is far beyond what animals can necessarily do to help us. We do help animals in this. We do help land. We do help when it's not all bad. And so it's beginning to see that that's the preciousness of the human birth. That yes, there is some people that just destroy the land. And there are some people that just, you know, love the land, give their whole life over to the land. And some of us are some here in the middle where we kind of help and do the best we can. That's the practice that we're trying to see where we're at. Wade, the difference is okay. That's true. Analio, yes, has that image of the soaring condor. That's what he does, is this becoming more and more and more translucent. Yes, Morgan, we make art. This whole process, over the course of the year, I think if we do it, if we really grow together, move together, have a sense that we are together, I just think it's no telling what's possible by this time in December, this time next year, when Tim and I will be trying to figure out what we're going to do next year to talk about. Because last year was so good, I don't have a clue what we're going to do after that. And that's what's possible for all of us if we stay together. I mean, you're not going to necessarily come every week, but if we stay together in the practice and support this kind of opening, the possibilities are endless of what we can do with each other. I see it all the time. I see it in sanghas all the time. And so that's what I want to encourage us, is to have this sense that we're doing this together. I'm not doing it by myself. And any confusion you have, everybody's got it. We're all kind of in it together. All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. I think that's all I have. And so, I think we're going to end on, Elizabeth's comment. You know, just to learn to, I'm encouraging you to accept where you are. That's exactly, not feel bad about it. You're not in any place that's somehow bad. And when you see the tails, you begin to see that everybody's on that trajectory. Everybody's lost and everybody's fighting with their inner self. It's all part of the process and it's very normal. Going through periods yourself, yes, where my practice was not picture perfect, it really gave this motivation to keep going through the week. That is really what this is about. The more we share, the more we're going to see it's not picture perfect. It doesn't have to be. We're just going to grow together. It's something about that. I mean, just think of it like this. This is what I want to leave you with, right? If you could make yourself awake. Who here wouldn't be awake? Anybody? I think if I could do it for myself, I would have been awake a long time ago. But we can't do it by ourselves. That is the point that I think Buddha was telling Ananda. In order for me to be awake, I have to actually share my practice with you, and you share your practice with me. And that's how we get awake, because we are too limited in our thinking if we just live, if we just use our own projections as to what it means to be awake. But if we do it together, it's all possible. There's nothing that's not possible. So thank you so much for your practice. Bye-bye.